What if everything belongs? What if the sadness is a part of the success? What if the failure is a part of your future? What if the divorce for me is a part of my humiliation and kind of reorienting, and it's going to make me a better husband, a better parent, a better coach down the road? What if even the worst of humanity, the worst of ourselves, the terrible things that happen to us, what if that's all can be repurposed for good? And I believe that it can.
Welcome to the Hey Presley podcast, where we give you the practical tools and inspiring conversations to pursue a higher quality of life. Through a variety of topics, we intend to show you that an exceptional life is available to anyone. I'm your host, Presley Hirsch, and let's dive in. Hey friends, and welcome back to the Hey Presley podcast. Before we dive in, I'd like to share a listener review from iTunes. This one is titled "Attitude is Everything" from Andreco Golf, and it says, quote, "Really enjoy Presley's perspective and approach with each episode, and there is always a positive vibe that goes with it that is so refreshing. This should definitely be in your regular rotation on your podcast list," quote. Thank you so much for that kind review, and it really makes my heart happy that you guys can feel the positive vibe that I try to bring to this show. That's awesome. If you would like the chance to be featured on the show or just want to make my day and make my heart happy, please take just a moment to rate and review this podcast in your podcast app, and thank you so much in advance. Now, let's get into today's show. I'm chatting with the founder of Spirit Farm, Caleb Anderson. As a longtime speaker, author of multiple books, husband, father, and personal growth junkie, he's changing the way that people approach personal development and spiritual growth. I had the honor to be interviewed on his show, the Spirit Farm Podcast, and was fortunate to learn more about his background and the mission behind his company that he's building, and I knew that I wanted to bring that to this audience and share it with you because it's something that's really special. Caleb's story about what led him to his current venture is really inspiring, and he's going to share that here today. And then we also talk about why feeling fulfilled is such a challenge for type A personalities or high achievers, along with why he started CrossFit at 40 years old, which is so cool, and the mantra that he uses to get through really tough times or daily challenges. This one is really good, guys. It's got a great balance of practical things that you can do in your life and just really empowering thoughts from Caleb's perspective. It's packed with good stuff. And the one thing that I want to get into before we dive into the show is that the word spiritual is going to come up a handful of times, along with words like religion or God, and I'm very sensitive to the fact that this audience is diverse, and I'm so grateful that people of different backgrounds and belief systems can resonate with this show. So I can assure you that the takeaways in this episode are applicable to you regardless if you currently feel a sense of strong spirituality in your life or not. And Caleb and I are really intentional about not speaking to one faith or one belief system in this conversation to make sure that it feels really valuable to you personally. So with that said, please enjoy my conversation with Caleb Anderson. Caleb, thanks for being here. I'm so excited to have you. I want to start with a commonality that you and I have, which is attending the same CrossFit gym. And I know you just started not terribly long ago. So what made you decide to start CrossFit?
Thanks, Presley. Thanks for having me on the show. It is great to be here. I'm a big fan of yours. And I first met you at this CrossFit gym.
Right.
That's how we even connected for the very first time. I brought my two boys. I have three kids, but I brought my two boys. And I just thought, okay, the coach is really good with not only people in the class, but also good with kids. I like this chick. And so I followed up with you, got to know you more. And I love all the things that you're about. So to your question, I'm doing CrossFit for the first time in my life. I turned 40 recently, and I realized that I've been working out by myself for like the last 20 years. So I played volleyball at USC back in the day. And so we had coaches and trainers and all of that kind of stuff. I'm just spoiled there, Heritage Hall, you know, with the football players and everything. And then when I left, I've really just been on my own. And turning 40, it was like, all right, I got to step up my game. And I was embarking or had recently embarked on new entrepreneurial ventures. And our family moved from Huntington Beach to the Phoenix Scottsdale area. And there was so much change. I was like, this is the time. I'm just going to make myself uncomfortable and do CrossFit. And it really is uncomfortable for me. I don't think that I'm a natural at it by any means. I was a ball sport kid. And now I'm with all these like freakish athletes that are, you know, maybe not ball sport people, but they throw themselves around on bars and rings and stuff that I can't do. And then, you know, the Olympic weights and stuff that my tall, skinny frame struggles with. So, but I just decided, I know, like, you know, that growth is just outside of our comfort zone. And so I just decided I need to be outside my comfort zone. I want to grow in a bunch of areas as I'm trying new things, as I'm exploring new territory, as I'm building business, as I'm, just kind of recreating and doing something, moving to the next level in my life. And so this is a tangible way for me to make myself uncomfortable for at least an hour a day.
That's great. That's so great. And what is it more specifically? Because I think that's super inspiring. Somebody could hear that and be like, yeah, do something that makes yourself uncomfortable. Like, that's something we've heard before, right?
Sure.
But then you go do it and it's really uncomfortable. So you go to your first CrossFit class. You have no idea what's going on. You know, there's a warm up on the board and there's something on the screen. And then people have friends that you don't have yet. And you're learning a new movement every time you go. So what is it that keeps you wanting to be in that uncomfortable? Because I know from starting CrossFit 4 or 5 years ago, you don't get the rewards right away. At first, you feel really sore and confused, you know, and like a lot of things that really pay off, it's not like an immediate benefit. So what kept you coming back after those first couple classes of getting uncomfortable?
Yeah, I'm about 5 months in and it's really just a decision to keep going back. Mm-hmm. There is the camaraderie of the relationships that I've built, and I've been intentional about connecting with people, mainly the coaches, because I think as a coach, I think I relate more to you, to the other coaches that are there. But really, it's just, I made a decision. I'm going to do this for at least 6 to 12 months, no matter what, even if I don't like it, even if I, you know, get hurt, I'll still try to do other things, because there's just something about forcing myself into those situations. One thing that comes to mind is growing up, I was really naturally good at things. So like soccer, basketball, volleyball came really naturally. I was good in the class, or I was good at school, but because I felt pressure to be a high performer, I didn't ask questions. I was nervous to raise my hand. I didn't want to look like I didn't have the answer. I didn't do things that I wasn't good at. And I regret that. I regret that, the pressure that I felt to have to have all the answers and have to have everything together, that, you know, that caught up to me in my 20s. You know, we can talk more about that. But what I decided, as it relates to CrossFit, is I'm just going to ask the questions. I'm going to look dumb. I'm going to say, I don't know. I don't know what your dumb acrostic it means. I don't understand this abbreviation. I don't understand, you know, what you just said right there, or how to do this exercise. And so that's probably one of the reasons why I've become friends with the coaches, is I've just not been afraid to ask. And I just keep walking up to you and to the others and just saying, can you show me how to do that? Because I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, and something to acknowledge you for that, I hope other people can take something away, you know, from, is you do a great job of asking a question and then going and trying it and then asking for feedback. And as somebody that's coached you, I think that sometimes we come into head with asking questions and then like wanting to feel so crystal clear or comfortable or confident with something before actually trying it. And you do a great job of, you'll ask a question, you'll go do it, and then I'll be like, okay, not quite right. Like, let's change this. But like, you did it, you know? And then it's like, then I can fix it. But if you just, especially with things that involve moving your body or taking action or actually having to do the thing, you can sit there all day and try and watch other people do it and ask questions and try to understand. But sometimes you just got to do it and be willing to look silly and then be open to the feedback in order to actually get better at it. And I think you do a great job of that.
Well, thank you. And I think that our bodies are kind of like a microcosm of the rest of life. You know, if we are willing to put in the time, if we are willing to make our bodies uncomfortable, if we are willing to push into the discomfort, if we are willing to keep training and keep showing up, going a little bit longer than we want to, doing a few more reps than we want to, trying something that we haven't done before, that just kind of like manifests itself in other areas of our lives. And on the emotional, spiritual, mental, vocational, financial, I think it's just all connected. I really believe that. And so, like I said, this is just like an easy, tangible way for me to force discomfort, get out of my box and out of my routine. And I think it's working. I'm just 5 months in, but it's working. I'm grateful for it. And I'm grateful for you. You're a great coach.
Oh, thanks. Well, we're glad to have you there at CrossFit Magna. So we're going to get into more of the high performer stuff and some of that, those struggles that kind of came to a head in your 20s for sure. But I do want to give some context to Spirit Farm and kind of where you are right now, which I know is probably a whole podcast on its own. But I think giving a little bit of your backstory kind of establishes your credibility. And it's also really interesting. So can you give us kind of the condensed version of what your professional career was leading up to running Spirit Farm full time?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so this is what I was born into. My grandfather was a pastor, like the kind that went around to like tents and dust bowls. and he was such a cool guy, such a good man. He played like 10 instruments.
That's so cool.
Had so much energy and passion on stage. I was like, dang, that's cool. I'm not like that though. I'm not interested in all the music and the organs and the, and the white leather shoes, not my jam. But then my dad was vice president of an organization called Young Life, and then later became a pastor. So I was like, I was just in that kind of ministry setting. But I decided, no, I want to do it differently. I don't want to do this exact path. I didn't really relate. I didn't really feel like that was quite for me. But I wanted to help people. I love people. Wanted to encourage people. Wanted to invest in people. And just as a kid, I was always the captain of every sports team. I was the oldest of three boys and 11 grandkids. And I just kind of always had that role of mentor, coach, you know, teacher, example, all that kind of stuff. So then when I was good at volleyball. So I got recruited to USC to play volleyball, and I wanted to study business because I actually wanted to make money. My dad and my grandfather hadn't. And so loved my business education at USC, got to play volleyball there. And that was the beginning of kind of the humbling process, where I had been the best at my high school. And then all of a sudden I was not. And there were like massive dudes who would cuss at me in like different languages. And I was like, where am I and what am I doing here? And so that was kind of the beginning of the humbling process, thinking like, who am I if I'm not like the greatest volleyball player in the school, let alone like just on my little team. So started sorting that out and figuring that out. But all the while just kind of being reaffirmed that even if I wasn't the highest performer or the best at the thing, I still had a way of influencing people. And so as a sophomore, they voted me captain of the team, even though I was sitting the bench. And the guy in front of me actually was the starting setter in two Olympics for our USA team. His name is Donald Suho, and still a friend, good dude. But that was a shift. Like the humility and not being the biggest, fastest, strongest kind of guided me back toward, well, maybe my best contribution is being an encourager and kind of being the one that rallies the guys together and being the captain and whatever else. So that seed was planted. Then even though I interviewed at like only business related jobs, commercial real estate, finance and management consulting and sales and all these things. Right before I was about to take a job, I got invited by someone who had worked for my dad on Young Life staff back in the day. And he was working at Saddleback, which is like one of the biggest, most influential churches in the country, and to where a guy named Rick Warren is. He wrote The Purpose-Driven Life, which is still, I think, best-selling hardback book of all time, nonfiction. Yeah. And so they invited me to come down and work for them and learn kind of the business side of that church world. And I was totally conflicted. I was like, oh man, I'm not sure I want to do that. But if I'm going to do the church thing, then the, you know, this is a great guy to learn from. So I went and I did that and I learned, but while I was there for a few years, got to speak on the stage and big stage and all that kind of stuff, got affirmed for those giftings. But I just felt like I want to do it my way. I want to do it a different way. So I left and tried to start my own thing. And as soon as I left to try to start my own, it was, you know, I had this vision for encouraging people through this digital means. And this is like 2005 when like
way
Facebook
before your time.
Yeah. I mean, just like, yeah.
I don't even feel like that.
It was barely a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I just thought, yeah, this is what I got to do. I got to blaze this trail. I saw this vision in my mind of like a network and pushing like inspiring content through this network to people digitally, but no one was on iPhones yet. Right. And it was like, so I didn't know what I was doing and it didn't work. And at the same time, my life fell apart. I went through a divorce and I was like, are you freaking kidding me? How am I supposed to continue to be impressive and this golden boy if like this golden boy that I have been? I have this like the scarlet letter now. I've been divorced. I'm ruined. Like, what am I supposed to do? And it was just this total undoing of my life and the scaffolding, like this religious veneer of looking the part, playing the part, being the perfect kid. It just all got shattered. And I had this like dark night of the soul where I was wondering like, what the hell do I do vocationally? Maybe I shouldn't be married. Maybe that's not for me. And how do I continue to be me? And so it was a rough like a couple of years of sorting that out and like relearning everything. And who am I if I'm not perfect? And if I'm not the example to everybody, or if I failed, you know, visibly and sort of publicly, not like I was high profile or anything, but it was public enough. And so that was the next real like intense layer of humiliation. I find that everyone's kind of a big fan of humility, but they prefer not to be humiliated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yet I think that that's the only path. And so it's better when you can just kind of like choose it on your own and not take yourself seriously. But I had to have so much of that kind of pride and religion and crap beat out of me. So kind of bounce back, refiguring out everything. I follow around this guy who's a corporate speaker. And he's, you know, I get to go with him, speak in front of Dunkin' Donuts and do kind of the corporate side of things. And I'm like, yeah, okay, something in between this corporate thing and the church thing. And then I got recruited and asked to do another church opportunity. And again, I was conflicted. I was like, I don't really know if this is for me. I don't want to do this. But it was just, I don't know why, the situation, newly married to my now wife, Hillary, and wanting to have a kid, and the entrepreneurial stuff was like not working or not moving fast enough. And I was like, okay, I'll do this. It's in Huntington Beach, for crying out loud. I get to live by the beach. This mothership church is going to pay me and like protect me and fund it, but I get to be me, and it's going to turn into its own independent church. And so I signed on, and part of it was kind of living coastal and feeling like that church thing maybe wasn't done in my life yet. I had this grandfather, father legacy thing. And then part of it was just kind of like a proving myself, like, mm-hmm. like screw you, religious culture. I can be divorced and still lead a church,
right.
You know, and build this thing, and all you religious hypocrites eat it, you know, cause I'm going to whatever. And so that I did that and grew this little thing from 200 to 2000 people.
Wow.
And then something amazing happened. I was not I was not really totally sure that this is what I should continue doing. We raised money. We found this movie theater, renovated it. Tons of people started coming. It was like the place to go to in town. And I just was like, oh man, it's full already. Like we spent these millions of dollars and it's already full. And I'm like in my 30s still, this can't be it. I want to reach more people. I want to reach outside of these silly walls and people that wouldn't go to church. And as I'm having that angst, I have this dream. I wake up and I'm kind of like in twilight, not really sure if I'm awake or asleep. And I had this like vivid image. I'm not a dream guy. That's just kind of like, I don't know. It's just not been my jam, been my experience, but this one was so clear and vivid. I was in this boat and it was like, this is going to be weird, but just roll with me. we're on the water in the first century and Jesus himself is in this boat. Okay. And his followers are around in this boat and the storm comes out of nowhere. And this massive storm is pouring down rain, lightning, thunder, the waves are beating against this boat. And I'm starting to panic. Like, what am I doing in this boat? How did I get here? And what is going on? Are we all going to die? And then his followers that are in the boat they're freaking out too. And one of them like gets in my face and starts pointing at me and says, this is your fault. There's something wrong with you. There's sin in your life and you're a terrible person. And I was like, oh, another religious hypocrite. What am I going to? And then, so I'm like, screw this. Where's Jesus? I look at the back and he's sleeping at the back of this boat. And I'm like, that's not right. We're going to die. And Jesus is sleeping. So I stand up to start to walk back there. And as soon as I do, he opens up his eyes, head still on the cushion, looks at me in the eyes, winks, and then goes back to sleep. And so I sat down in this moment and I was like, oh, okay, that's weird. But I guess I don't have to be afraid. I guess I don't have to panic. I guess I don't have to worry. I guess if the God of the universe is like in the boat and in control, then I don't have to live in fear. And so I woke up and I was like, oh, that's really cool. I should talk about that and help people with that. And so I told I gave a message about that in the church service and stuff. And then thinking, oh, let me impart this beautiful vision to you for your anxiety, people, you know. And then 2 weeks later, I just my whole life, kind of our thing that we had built and life as we knew it imploded. And I was being groomed to kind of take over the mothership, the church that had kind of hired me to lead this one. And for a variety of reasons that we don't need to get into, that was the decision was made that I wasn't going to take that over, but the person that they wanted to take that over didn't really want to come if I was still up the road. And so they asked me to resign this thing that we had just built, whatever. And it was like, it was so devastating, so crazy, just disorienting. And yet I had that dream. I had that vision and I was like, holy crap, that was for me. I started to immediately teach people about it and talk about it. That freaking thing was for me. And so I have, ever since then, I've built this meditation habit, that kind of revolves around that. And then some other things too, that have kind of like sustained me and centered me, every morning over the past year and a half. But we can talk about that in a second. That was a very long way of answering your question and I apologize.
No,
but that's when I decided, the political thing with that big church, it was such a disaster. And they did feel bad about it, that they made that decision. They kind of paid us to leave and leave town. And so it was like the opportunity to come full circle And I remembered that vision that I had like 15 years earlier that I tried to do, and it was before its time. And I'm like, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to encourage humans, not Christians, humans, to be all that they're designed to be and to live and trust and make the most of this God-given life. And I'm going to help them with anxiety. I'm going to help them with their marriages. I'm going to help them with depression. I'm going to help them with all these areas of life and kind of walking out their uniqueness and making the most of the time that they have. So I created Spirit Farm to be a platform for personal development. It's kind of the convergence of kind of personal spiritual development and bringing in voices, experts, even people like yourself. I'd love to have you involved in the area. I mean, you're an expert in a couple of areas, but nutrition being one of them. And but I'm bringing in people that are experts in their arenas, and that anyone who aligns with that concept of wanting, being hungry to grow, wanting faith, God, their, you know, the spirituality integrated into that process and that growth in their life, is going to find great resources in Spirit Farm, and that's what we are about. That's what we're building.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. There's so many things I could tease out from that. One thing that I want to start with is, how do you define spirituality? And the reason that I ask partly is because I historically have not spoken to religion on this podcast, and it's not something I've historically been super involved with. And I remember when you invited me on your podcast, I was pretty frank about like, ooh, I'm not super like this way, but like, you know, I'm open kind of thing. And you were so welcoming and honest with me about the intention of your podcast and Spirit Farm as a whole. So how do you define personally or professionally as it relates to Spirit Farm spirituality for people that maybe don't resonate with the concept of God or Jesus or some of those other notions?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I would suggest that that we are wired with three dimensions or four dimensions: body, mind, heart, and soul. And whenever I talk to people that are pursuing health, I find that the people that think that health is just a matter of fitness are frustrated, because you can really dial in your diet and nutrition. You can really dial in the exercise, those things that we've already talked about. But if you're not paying attention to the fact that your mind is out of order, there's some mental health issues, it could sabotage the whole deal. If you're not paying attention to the fact that there's emotional trauma that you've been stuffing down for years, conveniently, when you work out, because our bodies are connected, some of that stuff starts to bubble to the surface, right? It's the whole of who you are trying to get your attention, saying there's some stuff that mm-hmm. needs to be dealt with, which is why, you know, therapy has come into the forefront and is so accepted nowadays. Even when in my parents' day, it was kind of frowned upon and taboo. Yeah. You didn't talk about it if you went to a therapist and whatever. Well, similarly, I think that kind of the soul is the flux capacitor of your life. Are you too young to have seen Back to the Future?
I've seen it, but only because my brothers are movie nerds. I'm pretty young for Back to the Future.
So in Back to the Future, there's the flux capacitor. That's like this thing that they invented that when the electricity or the power that it hits the flux capacitor, that's what brings the thing to life and it can travel through time. So I feel like your soul is like the flux capacitor. It's like the thing that energizes you at the core of your being. And as I've talked to people that have a variety of different beliefs and faiths, people can get behind that. Like there's a spiritual dimension to them that it's kind of difficult to deny, that everything in life is not just a matter of material, what you see and can touch, but there's another element. And so for me, I think I just credit anything that's true and real to God. And if there's a creator God that created everything, then, you know, I'm good. Let's just kind of lump that in. If it's universe for someone, I'm good with that terminology, whatever you want. I just use the term God, because that's the tradition that I'm comfortable with and came up in. But I see it the same way. I just think that we're spiritual beings having a human experience, and we want to pay attention to that spirit, that soul, and that connection with our creator who's bigger.
That was very beautifully put. Thank you for sharing that. I'm totally going to pivot because I made some notes when you were going through your story, and there's a lot of different things that I want to ask you about. One of them is this idea, and maybe this is something you don't struggle with at all. I would be interested to know, which is why I'm going to ask you, where do you find that balance between passion and encouragement, and this is your life's work, and you get energized by encouraging people and helping people, and you would probably do it for free because it's like fulfilling to you, and needing to take money for it because this is your job? And you made a point, you know, I wanted to make money because my dad and my grandfather didn't, in a similar line of work. And I find that when I speak with a lot of entrepreneurs or even people that want to build side hustles or do things that genuinely fill up their cup and light them up and it makes them excited to do it and they would do it for free, that then they have a hard time asking for a monetary exchange of that value. Is that something that you've struggled with, or how do you find that balance? Because I know that Spirit Farm also does a lot of free content. So I'm curious, is that something that you've wrestled with in the past?
Oh, for sure. I've wrestled with that in the past, especially coming from the background that I do.
Sure.
With a dad and a grandfather who were kind of in the, quote, the ministerial setting when everything is supposed to be free, and people, you know, throw money at the church or at the organization, mm-hmm. when they have it. It's been a struggle for me. Fortunately, I think I have that business degree from USC that kind of helped me lay a little bit of the foundation. But you have that. It's kind of a constant tension of mm-hmm. I want to serve. I want to give this away. And one of the things that I've learned is that a lot of things in life are not problems to be solved, but tensions to be managed. Mm. And I think that we, as people who want to do good and serve people, will always just have to live in that tension. Sometimes we'll make an exception and we will just do the thing for free because we feel like it's right. But we've got to build systems and put processes in place to make sure that our own needs are met and that our business, our mission can be advanced, and it takes money to advance the mission. 100%. And so if you build a system in place, for me right now, it's a funnel. How am I building a funnel just to get real nitty gritty,
sure.
that gives something away for free that is valuable, that invites people into the universe of what we're doing, offering, creating. And then that free thing is followed up with something cheap. And then that cheap thing is followed up with something a little bit more expensive for people that want to go to the next level. And then that moderately expensive thing is followed up by something more expensive for people that want to go to the next level. So if you picture a funnel, like an actual funnel that you would pour something into, and it kind of siphons down, there's a wide end of the funnel that hopefully I can have some touch, some impact, or the other voices that participate with Spirit Farm can have some impact on a wide variety of people. But people will self-select to the degree that they feel connected or that they feel served, that they want to go further. They'll self-select to go deeper into the funnel to get the book, and then to get the 30-day challenge, and then to come to the retreat, and then to get coaching. So that's what it looks like for me. And having that system, that process, that funnel, that business model in place, it allows you to be flexible and make spontaneous, generous decisions once in a while.
That's a great point. That's such a good point. And really speaking to, it allows you to still, because I think that's a tension that a lot of entrepreneurs or side hustlers run into is, well, how do I help more people if I always need to ask for money in exchange for it? And so you make a really great point about how you can set it up so that you can keep moving the mission forward because you need money and funds to do that while still having a really great impact.
Yeah. And if you're convinced that what you're offering is valuable, then you want as many people to know about it as possible, and you're not ashamed to put some value, to attach some value to it. And we know from studies that people that don't pay anything for what's being offered really don't value it.
Right.
So even in my nonprofit work, when we're serving poor or impoverished people or other friends of mine that do that kind of work, you still want to attach some kind of value so that there's a sacrifice. Otherwise, the person doesn't really appreciate the thing, doesn't really value the thing, and isn't going to take care of the thing or apply the thing, whatever it is. So attaching value to something is not a bad, it's not bad, it's necessary. And not only for you and your livelihood, but also for the person to take it, appreciate it, value it, and implement it.
Absolutely. Yeah. You don't pay attention. Right. And I always think about just the abundance of information in the world. You know, there has never been a time when more free resources are available at your fingertips, yet we still hire coaches and we go to workshops and we do these things that add to the level of accountability, even though in theory, you know, when we go pay for degrees and it's like, you could go learn that stuff on your own, but you're not going to, you know, a lot of the time. Or not as fast, or not as well, you know?
Exactly. Kind of part of what you do, part of what I do, part of what information kind of marketers do that are kind of experts online or whatever, is they're synthesizing, distilling, and putting it into an organized fashion so that it saves you the time, it saves you the energy, saves you the chaotic hustle of trying to find all the pieces that are everywhere, because there's such an overabundance of stuff and noise that having people distill it down to a step-by-step process is worth the money.
Yeah. Gosh, I really like what you said. I wrote it down on my note page here that problems are not always meant to be solved. It might just be managing tensions.
Right.
I think that's so profound. I have been working through this concept lately and making some big life transitions where, you know, I get excited about something, but then I'm nervous about the fact that I'm excited, because then if it doesn't pan out, then it leaves room for feeling sad and disappointed. And it's kind of like, if you don't get excited, you can't be disappointed kind of thing. And I've been working through this idea of, you can hold space for both. Like, why can't you have a life where you can hold space for times to be excited and to be sad, and that be okay, and them to complement each other? And so I feel like that's very aligned. It's not always that you need to solve something. It's, what if we actually had two tensions, but they balance each other, and then it's kind of meant to be that way. That's really cool.
Yeah. And what if everything belongs? What if the sadness is a part of the success? What if the failure is a part of your future? What if the divorce for me is a part of my humiliation and kind of reorienting, and it's going to make me a better husband, a better parent, a better coach down the road? What if even the worst of humanity, the worst of ourselves, the terrible things that happen to us, what if that's all can be repurposed for good? And I believe that it can. And so my worldview is a both and worldview, not an either or worldview. It's not easy to live in a constant tension and to accept the bad with the good. But it makes more sense the longer that you live. And I think it allows you to live with more peace.
Absolutely. I want to ask you about something that I read on your website, and I'm going to read it directly so I don't mess it up. And it was, Caleb leans into the liberating truth that freedom and fulfillment are possible even for type A high performers when we connect with reality and our humanness, struggles, and failures unlocking our potential and leading to increased purpose and passion. And what I really want to tease out from that is the even for type A high performers. What is it about that personality type that maybe leads them to struggle with feeling fulfilled?
Yeah. There's this expectation that has been put on us probably since we were a young age that we would do great things, right? And for some of us, maybe we didn't have that expectation put on us Maybe we grew up in a different kind of environment, but we put it on ourselves. And we've just determined that we are going to outrun our limitations, that we are going to prove ourselves, or whatever the case may be. But there's something in us that's driving us to perform, to contribute. And in that same kind of both and spirit, there's a good thing about that. There's drive, there's ambition. None of the achievements, advancements, big companies, large buildings, none of that would be possible if people didn't hustle and drive and commit to things and see them through. We need the type A people like you and me and the people who are listening. We need to be us. And there, if we let it, it will eat away at our soul and we'll never be satisfied. If we keep chasing the next thing and expect the next thing to satisfy, the next big project, the next big success, the next big paycheck, the next big building, the next big whatever, if we associate in our hearts and souls, if we think that that will bring fulfillment, that that is going to give us something that we need inside, we'll just perpetually be disappointed. I have found that pursuing peace actually leads me to an even deeper sense of purpose. Then when I sit still in the morning and I practice, I meditate, the words don't matter. There's prayer integrated, meditation, there's focus, however you want to think about that. When I get to that spot, I'm stilling my body, I'm stilling my mind, I'm being aware of my emotions, I'm tapping into my soul. And then purpose for why I'm here, why I exist, what I'm supposed to do next, it starts to just come out somehow. I don't know how to explain it. You're still enough, you're listening, you're aware, you're not forcing, you're not striving and pressing, and something just starts to come out. And it becomes, there's more clarity, there's more contentment, there's more of an awareness of who I am. And I have more focus for the day, for what I'm supposed to do. And I actually find that when I pursue peace, I find purpose and progress happens. When I pursue progress, I'll make stuff happen, but it's not going to be fulfilling. And mm-hmm. So I've shifted my thinking from the next big idea, because I have lots of ideas. And if I just chase them down and make progress, I got to make a name for myself, I got to do the whatever, it's just not satisfying. But if I can be satisfied for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes in the morning, I find that I make the right progress, and I actually, ironically, even make it faster, and things just start to line up, and people call or text that I didn't initiate, and there's connections, and there's new job opportunities, and there's things that just kind of come into alignment. That's back to there being a spiritual dimension to this life and a higher power, however you want to refer to that. And tapping into that is so critical. And I think it's the saving grace for us type A's.
Absolutely. And it's funny that you said like us, because I was going to ask that question, like asking for a friend or a podcast listener that might be type A, obviously not me. that's such a good point. Have you ever read Atomic Habits by James Clear?
Yeah, I think it's excellent.
Excellent. I recommend it all the time. And I'll put it in the show notes if you haven't read it yet, but he talks a lot about this idea of, you know, what if you took actions aligned with the kind of person that you wanted to be? So instead of saying, I want to lose X amount of pounds, what would the person that would be 10 pounds lighter, what would they do today? You know, they would invest in their relationships, and they would go to bed on time, and they would drink their water, and they would eat protein and vegetables, and like, right? So what if you focused on those actions instead of focusing on the end goal, and then you get there anyway, like you said. But it's definitely a mind shift from being very focused on the end result.
Yeah. And I think that's a great example of something that helps, of just to kind of take some of the intense pressure off myself to perform in all these variety of minuscule decisions, and just kind of look ahead and say, okay, this is who I am. This is the kind of person that I'm becoming. That's an example out there of the kind of person, at least in that way, the thing that they're good at, that I want to do, or I want to be, or I want to have, or I want to operate that way. What kind of decisions does that person mm-hmm. make? And by the way, that's the kind of person that I am. So I'm not gonna sweat the small stuff and obsess about everything and check every single box, but I'm just gonna kind of get my heart and soul there first, and then my mind will follow and start to move my feet in that direction and make little adjustments as I go. But I think that that's a good thing that you bring up. I resonate with that too.
And speaking of big overarching end result goals, you've written 4 books, which I've never written a book, but I listen to a lot of authors and know a few authors, and I know that it is no easy task by any means, and it's a lot more involved than probably a lot of people think. So how do you go about writing a book? And again, could probably be its own podcast, but are there habits or ways that you break down a big overarching goal like that into something a little bit more manageable?
Yes. Yes, I do. So I'll have these ideas kind of germinating for a while, and I'll wonder, is that a book? Is that a podcast? Is that an article? Is that something else? And I use Evernote. And so I'll just kind of drop it in Evernote. And sometimes I drop it in a folder or a notebook that is a book idea. And then it moves to the podcast in a notebook. And then it moves to some other whatever. But I usually sit with stuff for a while and I just write a few phrases. Like, I think it's about this, or it's related to this, or I saw this movie that made me passionate for this reason, or there's this story that made me think about it this way, or whatever. And I'll sit with that for a while. And the stuff that lingers, I think, all right, I need to do something about that. I've heard famous musicians and songwriters say that they just have to get the song out on page. They just have to write it before they can move on. Even if it sucks, even if it's bad, they just have to get it out of them because they can't move on until they do. So if I have 10 ideas in a week, let's just say a week, and I'm only probably going to do one of them, but I'm not sure which one that is for a couple of weeks or for a couple of months. And so I'll just kind of see what lingers, what sticks with me, what other things I'm noticing in life, what kind of problems that people are telling me that they have that maybe this might speak to. And I'll just drop little thoughts, little ideas, whatever, in my Evernote. And then when I decide, okay, this is something that I have to do, I'll think, okay, well, when can I do that? Where does that fit? How does that make sense in the schedule of things and my other obligations and the content kind of calendar that I have? All right, so that might work then. Okay, so I'm going to start outlining it now. So I'll outline the thing, and I'll still do that in Evernote, and I'll put the subheadings, I'll do a bunch of bullet points, I'll do some research, throw in links and articles and stories and thoughts, all in my Evernote. And then somewhere down the road, there's usually a gap between the outlining and the actual writing, because I find that the actual writing is the hardest part. And when I have to, because that's when you have to just block time. You can't. Anyone who tells me that they're waiting until they're inspired to write is telling me that they're not going to write, because you are inspired when you train yourself to be inspired. And I can't remember the author, who someone impressive and famous. I don't want to attribute it to, I'd just be shot in the dark, but they were asked if they write when they're inspired or as a routine. And they said, I write when I'm inspired, which conveniently is 9 a.m. every morning.
Mm.
And that's true of me too. I block the time, and I block at a minimum of 90 minutes. It can't be less than that, because it takes a while just to get into the zone. And you get into the zone by writing. You don't get into the zone by staring or by walking around or by going for a swim. I mean, all those kinds of things are fine first, but just don't be confused. You get into the zone of writing by writing, and you might have to write for 45 minutes that's garbage and just disregard all of it, but eventually you'll get to some good stuff. And that's what I do. So it's usually 2-3 hour chunks, and then I'll take a break and I'll do a meeting or do something else in the afternoon and come back to it again. My best writing times are usually in the morning. And so I try to protect my mornings for content creation, whether it's writing a book or working on a podcast or something different, like writing a talk that I might give from a stage or whatever. But the time blocking is critical. And then just defending that time, defending it, not letting it get interrupted or stolen or whatever, because that is as significant as an appointment as any other appointment. And things do not get created if we do not protect those times.
Absolutely. You said so many good things there. And I know that this audience has really resonated in the past with the very tactical, like, tell me what to do this thing. And I feel like that was all so practical and helpful. And I really want to highlight that you said, you know, you don't get inspired to write by swimming and drinking your, you know, mushroom coffee and then meditating. And it's like, do those things help and maybe put you in the right state? Sure. But you can't block your 90 minutes and spend 60 minutes trying to get stoked to write and then hope that something comes in that last 30 minutes. I can't even tell you how many times I've blocked out time to work on a website for 2 hours. In the first hour, I feel like I'm not getting anywhere because I don't want to be working on the website. And then I find my stride in the second hour. And it's like, if I hadn't spent that first hour, you know, I wouldn't have found it. I talk about this a lot with free writing and journaling with my nutrition clients. You know, I'll say, you know, I want you to free write for, I'll give, you know, tell them 10 or 15 minutes. And I'm like, you're going to write for 3 and be like, that's all I got. That's everything in my brain right now. That's all I got. But you need to keep writing because then you're going to get to the good stuff. And it doesn't come out immediately. So I just want to highlight that you said that because I think that's such a valuable tip.
And it's so important. And the stuff that you said, the swimming, the walking, the mushroom coffee, the whatever, I'm an advocate for all those things.
Sure.
But those are not your time block writing.
Yes.
Do those things before, do those things after. I break up my days usually at noon with a lunch meeting or a walk or, you know, whatever. But that writing time is writing time. And don't check the email. Sometimes I'll put my phone just on airplane mode. It's kind of hard with young kids and whatever. But just block it. Just block it and make it happen. Just in terms of the tactical, I also use a program called Scrivener, C-R-I-V-V-E-R or N-E-R. And I find that is helpful. That helps me to organize, and it shows you on the left-hand column all the chapters, and you can move them around really easily, which if you're trying to write in Word or something, it's a nightmare to like find where you are and jump to chapters and things like that. So Scrivener is a good tool for that. And then I've gotten a big publishing deal, and I thought that it was kind of overrated. They didn't help me sell the book. They were helpful in the editing and creation, getting it printed process, but not in the marketing process. So this next book, I'm actually doing a book on Jesus Winks, that vision that I told you about in the boat, and meditation and kind of dealing with anxiety in some of those ways. I'm self-publishing it because I did all the work on the marketing anyway. And so Spirit Farm will also be an entity that will publish not just my stuff, but some other stuff that aligns. But all that to say, it's easier than ever to just get it done, get it out yourself, to ship, to go with it, to put it out in the world. And I don't advocate waiting for a publisher to find you or even sending your manuscripts to publishers. I think that's worthless unless you have a good agent anyway. And even though I have a good agent, I'm trying it this way for a while.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations. That's super exciting. In talking before this interview, you told me something that really intrigued me, which is that you like to utilize the phrase or the thought process of, I can use this approach to, and applying it to life's detours or annoyances or things that come up. So what does that mean? Can you kind of expand on that?
Yeah, I say I can use this. So,
I can use this as the approach.
I can use this. Whatever the situation is. So I'll give you an example. I have a 7, almost 5, and almost and 2.5-year-old, and so life is crazy. And I find that it seems that the entrepreneurs that make it the furthest, the fastest, either aren't married or don't have kids, or they just throw themselves into it and they're working crazy hours. That's what it seems like from Instagram anyway, and from the stories that you hear, but that's really not the case. There's a lot of people that have done so much and incredible things and still balanced family and whatever else that you know you value to balance. It's possible. I'm committed to that. And so one of the things that I have to wrestle with is what happens when I'm interrupted? And so I'm working on something and my four-year-old walks in, hey dad, I'm going to ask you something. And I'm like, oh crap. And so instead of getting frustrated and upset and yelling at him, I go, okay, first of all, there's boundaries. And you know, Hillary and I, my wife and I talk about, hey, when I'm in here. So we have a plan. We have an operational plan of these are the times I'll pop out. I'll say hi. The door, please try to keep the kids. So there's a plan. I'm all for planning and process, and there's interruptions and there's unexpected things. So how do you react when there's something interrupting you, whether it's a kid or whether it is a financial setback or whether you took a wrong turn, you bought a wrong software, you organized the company in the wrong way, you hired someone that's the wrong person, you whatever those things are, how do you respond? Well, I respond, I can use this. I can use this setback. This is going to teach me something. Mm-hmm. I can use this interruption. This is going to soften my heart and help me not take myself too seriously. I can use this financial problem because it's going to help me to trust. It's going to help me to hustle. It's going to help me to think more creatively. It's going to help me to think outside the box that I don't have money to throw at this problem. I can use this injury because it's going to slow me down and it's going to cause me to take walks instead of runs. I can use whatever it is, and it kind of builds upon the principle that you probably heard that life is not happening to you, it's happening for you. So if life is happening for me and I believe that, and I believe in a God of the universe who can bring good out of any bad situation, then how can I apply that for good? How can I use this? I can use this for good. How can I turn this into a positive thing for gain? And that's how I try to look at problems, obstacles, interruptions, and setbacks.
I love that. The more that you talk, the more I feel like you and I are just like so on the same wavelength. I have a very similar one, which I think to myself, I've been training for this. And maybe that's like the athlete in me. But when something comes up, like an annoyance or something frustrating, you know, when I accidentally rear end somebody or when I'm late for an appointment, right? I think I've been training for this. And it's like this moment where I'm like, everything I've been doing and practicing and trying to share with other people and coaching and working on personal development has led me to this opportunity to show that I've been training for this. You know, so when somebody cuts me off in traffic, it's like, I've been practicing patience. I've been training for this, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a way to bring you back to the moment. And I feel like yours, I can use this, is very similar. That's really cool.
There's a guy that I know that has a terrible sense of direction. And when he's driving, he gets lost all the time. He gets lost just going to like his, you know, neighborhood grocery store.
Yeah.
And I've been riding with him when it was just, you know, another day for him, but he took the wrong turn and someone else is in the car and they're like, hey, Rick, you took the wrong turn again, man. You're supposed to go left back there. He goes, oh, it's better this way. Otherwise, I wouldn't have seen that house right there. Otherwise, I wouldn't have seen that car. Otherwise,
that's
right?
So cool.
He just spins it. Yeah. Oh, shoot. Well, it's better this way, it turns out.
That's so cool.
I think with that mindset, you just enjoy your life more.
Yes.
You don't take yourself as seriously. And you can more quickly convert whatever the setback is into something positive. And if you're looking for the positive, you'll find them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So good. Last few questions for you. What are you most excited about right now?
Man, I'm excited about this vision for Spirit Farm because it's like I said, it's like a 15-year-old vision, and that I think is coming into its own and finally going to have its day. I'm excited that I'm having to become something new, learn more things, stretch in ways that are uncomfortable to see this thing through. I'm excited that I don't know how it's going to happen, but I'm determined to make it happen. And there's all kinds of things along the way that need to happen for things to line up. And that's just, adventures are exciting.
Yeah.
I'm enthusiastic. I love people. I love connecting people. And I think that one of my, if people have superpowers, and we do, one of my superpowers is I can see the genius in other people and help draw it out. And even someone like you, I saw when you're young, you're so wise and capable beyond your years. And I knew quickly that you have such high capacity and have such great things in store for you. And so it's fun for me to get someone like Presley and say, Presley, what if we did this together and we created this thing, and here's how you would be awesome at this. Now let's map this out. And then this could live in the Spirit Farm universe and help all kinds of people in this way. And so I have like a dozen other people that are a genius in some different area. And I really get excited about helping them win and helping their expertise get out into the world. I'm not trying to make a big name for myself or just do this on my own. It's fun for me to do it with people that I like and that I can help them along their way too. So I'm excited about that and the unknown adventure in front of me.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that. That's very exciting. And I know that you're taking some of these people that you love and admire and bring them all together for what I believe is the first Spirit Farm retreat, right? In April, the Good Life Retreat. Can you tell us who that's for, and where do people go to find out more about it if they are interested?
Sure. Yeah. Our first retreat is going to be April 16 to 19 at the Hotel Valley Ho. So if you are a Phoenician living in Scottsdale or Phoenix, you're probably familiar. This is one of the coolest hotels I've ever been to. I love this place. If you're not from around here, you just look it up. Just search for it, Hotel Valley Ho. It's so epic. But we're going to be there, and the retreat is called The Good Life. And it's for people who are hungry to grow, but want to find this both and sense of peace and progress, who want to figure out how to integrate their body, mind, heart, and soul. Who want to slow down for a bit and have a healthy dose of inspiration, but also time for rejuvenation. I've been to some events that are just a fire hose from 9 to 9 and I leave tired,
right?
You know? And so I wanted to back it down a little bit and create space for people to reflect by the pool and to walk into Old Town Scottsdale and to meet some people and to do some of their own exercises. To do rooftop Pilates with my wife, who's a world-class Pilates instructor, to hike Camelback Mountain, and just to really help people see that everything belongs, everything is integrated, everything connects, body, mind, heart, and soul. So people that get that are on board with that, or that they want more of that for their life, would probably really enjoy this event.
Awesome. And are all the details at on Spirit Farm's website?
Yeah, spiritfarm.tv/retreats. And we'll do a promo code for anyone that signs up. I'm offering a promo code for the rest of February and March, that is FRIENDS20. And you can, if you type in FRIENDS20 as a code, you will get 20%. Off of the ticket. You don't have to stay at the Valley Ho, but you should.
That's amazing. Thank you. And we'll put that in the show notes as well, so people have easy access to it. Before I get into my last question, where can people go to connect with you personally, to listen to the Spirit Farm podcast, which I know you're at over 80 episodes now, which is amazing, or to learn about just everything you guys are doing at Spirit Farm?
Yeah, Spirit Farm TV. The website is a work in progress, but it's the hub. And then I am on Instagram and Facebook at calebanderson.tv. And Caleb is C-A-L-E-B. Anderson is S-O-N. And those are great places to stay in touch.
Perfect. And lastly, what do you believe are the ingredients of a fulfilling life?
The ingredients of a fulfilling life. The first thing is to be you. To kind of relentlessly and daily explore what it is to authentically be you, to strip away all the projection, to strip away all the pressure and the performance, to get to the root of who am I? And then I'm convinced, I believe that you are a person with a design, body, mind, heart, and soul, a spiritual being on a physical, you know, a human journey and experience. That if we tap into that body, mind, heart, and soul, if we tap into that soul to give us clarity for the journey ahead, I think that that's the only way to fulfillment. And it actually sparks better progress in the meantime.
Absolutely. That's a great answer. Caleb, thank you so much for being here and your time and sharing your wisdom and your thoughts. This was really fun and I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Presley. I think you're great and look forward to seeing you again.
Hey guys, before you go, I just want to mention a few quick things. First, if you loved this episode, please share it with a friend. Just shoot them a message with the link, which you can do right from your podcast app. Or I would love it if you post a screenshot of this episode to your social media or your Instagram story, and then just make sure you tag me at Hey Presley so I definitely see it and can thank you. And if you haven't yet, please do subscribe to the show so you don't miss upcoming episodes. As always, any references, tools, or links mentioned in this episode are right there in the show notes for your convenience. And if you have any questions for me, suggestions for the show, anything like that, shoot me a message on Instagram, again, at Hey Presley, or at podcast@heypresley.com. Thank you so much for listening, and make it a great day.